Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Hello, everyone, and it is Sunday evening. Wild card weekend just finished with a thriller. That second game made up for the absolute dud that was the first game this weekend. The Carolina Panthers' last-ditch effort to defeat the New Orleans Saints was for naught. Cam Newton was unable to finish a drive in a game that I thought he played great. As someone that's a fan of Cam's, I enjoyed watching in and seeing him and Drew Brees go back and forth. But the divisional round is set, and that's what we're going to talk about because there's no real Packers news today. So I'm joined with Jason Perrone. Jason, how'd you feel about Wild Card Weekend?
Yeah, another slow day in Packers land for sure. So this was a good day for us to get the show out of the way this week and just kind of
sit
and hope.
There was a thing.
That's right, the thing. Yeah, the thing about the place.
Okay.
Yeah, right, the
All
thing.
Right, okay. So that's actually what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm sure most of you have heard by now, unless you live under a rock, the Green Bay Packers have a general manager. It's not Russ Ball. It's not Elliott Wolf. It's not John Schneider, who was reported a target of the Packers. It is Brian Gutekunst, the former director of pro and college personnel. He's held various titles throughout his time in Green Bay. He was originally hired as a scout by Ron Wolf in 1998. Many of you know Ron Wolf's name, and we'll get to that. We have a couple guests tonight. We have Justice Mosqueda of Bleacher Report, Playmaker Mentality, and a couple other places, and we have Michelle Bruton of Cheesehead TV. So a lot of news to discuss and digest and dissect and all those other D words that mean breakdown. But Jason, in all seriousness, I won't interrupt you this time. How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. I am in one of the few sunny and not frigid zones of the United States, so I'm going to call that a win right there. All's going well. Pretty decent football games. Well, three pretty decent football games, and one clear example of what happens when your teams have not been in the playoffs in a couple of decades. They're very rusty. So can't complain, though. We got some clarity on a pretty big situation, and it's interesting because it kind of ended the way very few predicted that it would.
Yeah, I don't know that I saw anybody that was handicapping the whole thing predict that Gutekunst was going to be the winner of the sweepstakes, if you will. And in other good news, before we get to the Packers general manager situation, with all due respect to Brian Gutekunst, because I am happy with the hire, and I'll explain why here in a little while. Jason, it's time to pour one out. Our personal favorite NFL official, Jeff Triplett, announced his retirement last night. So do you have any parting words for Mr. Triplett?
GTFO, brother.
Amen. GTFO, good riddance, clown, whatever way you want to put it. I kept asking all the time how this guy continues to have a job in the National Football League when everyone knows he sucks. And so Jeff can go do whatever it is his day job is. I look forward to him doing more of that and less of ruining football games. The worst officiated game this weekend was Titans and Chiefs. And surprise, surprise, that was Jeff Triplett. So good riddance. He makes me almost miss the days of the replacement officials. So for those of you, like I said earlier, that lived under a rock, here's kind of the timeline of how things went down this weekend. Yesterday, Packers wanted to request permission to interview John Schneider, the Seattle Seahawks general manager, Wisconsin native, and former Packers scout. So the Seahawks denied that request, and there was thoughts that the Packers maybe they would try to fight and say, hey, it's a promotion, he'll have 53-man roster control, yada, yada, yada. And that was really it for yesterday. Not that that's not big news, but that was really it for the majority of yesterday. So once the Seahawks declined the interview, Brian Gutekunst was scheduled to interview for the Texans GM job in Houston today. He got down there, but never interviewed with Houston. It was clear this was the job that he wanted. He wanted to be the general manager for the only team that he's ever worked with, and he's been here for almost 20 years. So Gutekunst gets the nod. That broke in, I believe, just before halftime of the first wild card game today. He gets a 5-year contract, so it is not the perceived favorite from all the writers was Russ Ball, which is the Packers' director of finance. He's the salary cap guy for layman term usage here. It is not going to be Russ Ball. So for everybody that – I think, Jason, we come from sort of different generations of Packers fans. And I'm not saying I love Mark Murphy. I've met him a few times. I think he's been really nice to me in the few chances I've had to talk to him. But otherwise, I think that the majority of the, and I don't want to say old, but previous generation of Packer fan base almost, it's almost like they undercut Mark Murphy at every turn and expect the worst from him because he's not Bob Harlan. And that's kind of the sense I got throughout this GM search, because everyone that, they're reading that, you know, Russ Ball is the leading candidate. And it's, well, of course, you know, Mark Murphy's going to hire his guy because it's his guy and he wants to ruin everything Bob Harlan built. And these are actual things that I've read. So maybe you can help me with that once we move forward with our guest here, actually, because we just had him call in. So it is a friend of the show. He's been here more than once. Usually we like to have him come on when there's a playoff game to break down. Unfortunately, there is not one of those. The number one fan in the Baker Mayfield fan club, that is Justice Mosqueda. Justice, welcome back.
How are we doing? We talked about Baker Mayfield, the best quarterback in the history of college football. Should have won two Heismans.
Should have won two Heismans and had a coach not.
Lamar Jackson robbed him.
Lamar Jackson robbed him, and had he had a coach not get his head firmly planted into a certain orifice, he'd be playing for the national championship tomorrow night. But for some reason, they didn't want to put the ball in his hand.
Yeah, that was weird. That was very weird at the end where it was a Andy Reid special. I feel like we saw that happen with the Kansas City Chiefs where he lost Travis Kelce and then the Tennessee Titans pulled in within a touchdown. And then you could just see the Andy Reid just sweep over the Kansas City Chiefs completely, where he was just afraid to push the ball further than 5 yards down the field. And it just caught up to him at the end.
Completely predictable, too. But welcome back. I know that your projects and stuff change from time to time. So real quick, before we get into this general manager thing, tell us, where are you? What are you doing? Where can we find all your stuff?
For now, I'm doing stuff with Bleacher Report. We're doing the NFL 1000 project again. So I'm ranking defensive ends 3-4 and 4-3. We already put up the 4-3, and then we're doing all the other positions, but I only have time to do defensive ends. And then for the most part, you can pretty much just catch me doing that, or go to the handle Setting Edge and follow the podcast that I do every week. It's mostly gambling centric right now, but then we do draft season, all sorts of stuff. I'm about to head out to Mobile. We try to bring on former players or big media, football media guys, just try to pick apart their brains, kind of go a little in-depth on a national level there.
Okay, so there's where you can find all of Justice's stuff in the 3-4, 4-3, the defensive ends, defenders and stuff like that. I imagine Kyler Fackrell will be ranked rather highly, even though that's not what you're doing, but I know – you're rather big in the Kyle Fackrell fan club.
Yeah, I actually I didn't do the 3-4 outside linebackers, but we had edge rankings together. Me and my good friend Derek Clawson did the outside linebackers, and I think we graded like 143 edge players, and Fackrell was in last place. So
that's not where you want to be. I guess the way that you want to look at it is it can only go up from here. I don't know. We're not here to talk about Kyle Fackrell. We're here to talk about the guy that's going to pick the next, hopefully better, versions of outside linebackers, and that's Brian Gutekunst. Let's start at the very beginning here because, I mean, I follow your opinions on Twitter, obviously, but some of them get lost in the shuffle. I don't know if you ever came out and said if you had a preference, but as the way this all shook out, you know, at the very beginning it was reported that Russ Ball was the favorite for this job, and then it was Elliot Wolf and Brian Gutekunst were going to interview. But that was mostly going to be lip service, and Murphy had already had his mind made up. And then we've got reports of Doug Whaley interviewing and Eric DaCosta being requested, and then John Schneider was the big story on that Reggie McKenzie had turned down an interview. Schneider may have taken one. We'll never know. But did you have a preference for how you wanted this GM search to play out? Did you have a guy, so to speak?
Not really, because I think the three names that we've always heard of, I'm going to mess up his name. The way I've always heard his name is Goot, so I'm just going to roll with Goot. I don't know how to say his full name without just completely butchering it right now. He, Young Wolf, and then Alonzo Highsmith seem to always be the three guys that people talked about as, like, potential general managers in waiting now that, you know, the John Dorsey's, John Schneider's, and all those guys have left. So I always just assumed that one of those three guys were going to step into the role. I really don't have an opinion between those three, honestly, just because we've never seen him run a draft or run free agency or anything like that. I think it's very hard to judge first-year general managers in that way or first-time general managers. I know I didn't want Doug Whaley because I know all Doug Whaley did his entire time in Buffalo was basically draft guys from the ACC. Like, he would only draft guys from the ACC and that they would bomb out. I don't think we need an E.J. Manuel here. And then Reggie McKenzie has had a pretty horrible stretch of drafting outside of obviously, they land Khalil Mack and Derek Carr. Those are the guys that everyone thinks about. But outside of drafting in the first round, he's been pretty awful in Oakland, so I wasn't a huge fan of him. People talked about John Schneider, and I understood it, but the Seahawks don't really have a bunch of young players who are, you know, playing super cheap for him right now. Like Schneider ends up trading out first and second round picks for veterans pretty regularly, and like it's not like any of these guys who are playing in Seattle right now are the stars on that team are any sort of young. I mean, there's Russell Wilson, who's been there since 2012, and then a defense that's basically been built, you know, ever since he's shown up there, basically. So I'm not sure I saw any of those guys as like, oh, we need to go get that guy. I'm not disappointed or happy about basically any GM candidate other than, you know, as long as we didn't pick up Doug Whaley. If we would have picked up Doug Whaley, I probably would have pulled my hair out or something.
Justice, it's Jason. Welcome back, man. It's good to chat with you. Happy New Year. And, yeah, like Jacob said, no playoffs to talk about. But we know, obviously, one of your strengths is player evaluation. And so turning to the draft, which will be handled by somebody different or somebody other than who's been doing it for the last 12 years, kind of interesting. Now, we don't know a lot about Goot, as you call him, in terms of what he might do and what his areas of expertise are in scouting. But maybe tell us what this draft is strong in, because everybody's already got their opinions for what Green Bay needs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that aligns with what this draft is going to be strong in. So every year there seems to be a couple position groups that are high on the radar. Obviously, we know cornerback and outside linebacker, pass rush, are going to be two important areas for Green Bay. So what are we looking at this year in terms of the talent pool?
Yeah, I think when people are going to paint the picture of this draft class, I think they're going to say there are enough names at quarterback that is going to fill up the entire offseason, right? It's very deep at running back. Basically, every single running back possible is declaring in this draft. Receiver, there's some talent there, but there's really not a lot of first-round talent. It's kind of a weak receiver class, which we kind of thought last year, but then three guys ended up going top 10, so who knows there. Offensive line, it's not great. It's a lot of small school guys. But defensive line, I would say, very, very deep. Defensive tackle and defensive end, there are a ton of guys that people on the national level aren't necessarily even caught up on. Like there are guys like Hercules Mataafa, who like is halfway Solomon Thomas, halfway Bruce Irving, and he basically plays defensive tackle for Washington State, but he's 240 pounds. He's going to end up being an edge rusher, but he's an absolute freak. I think he had something like 30 combined tackles for a loss and sacks last year. So he was just completely dominant, and he's basically been dominant since he got playing time as a true freshman. You talk about cornerback, there's obviously a bunch of cornerback talent. I mean, Micah Fitzpatrick's probably going to be the highest defensive back drafted in this class, but he kind of plays like a Micah Hyde type role for Alabama, where he's not really outside all too much. He's playing in the slot, and then he's playing high safety spots, but then he's also like blitzing off the edge a ton too, kind of Harrison Smith-ish, I guess I would say. But he's listed as a cornerback for him sometimes, so I don't know. That's kind of an odd one. Tavarius McFadden from Florida State, he's kind of like Xavier Rhodes in the same way that he's, he went to Florida State. He's very raw and he's very aggressive at the line of scrimmage. I guess Kevin King would kind of be a comparison there, but I think Kevin King's more of an athlete than him. And then I think the other name that people are going to talk about a lot, at least in terms of like first round ability right around where the Packers are drafting, is Josh Jackson from Iowa, who's just basically an interception machine, especially at the end of the season.
And I love him. So there's that as well. You mentioned edge rushers, and you mentioned cornerbacks, and you mentioned all those things. So another bit of news, this isn't really about the general manager, I guess, but it's about decision-making in general, is Dom Capers is no longer the defensive coordinator on this team. So really the Packers have free reign for what they want to do. They can make this a 4-3 team if they want to. Some have suggested that they should. Others have suggested to just stay with a 3-4 base. With the talent that's on the roster and the guys that you think should be here next year, so like, for example, obviously they're not going to plan their defense, in your estimation, with Kyler Fackrell's position in mind, for example. But like guys like Clay Matthews and Nick Perry and Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels, guys like that, what do you think is better suited? Do you think the Packers are better suited to run a 4-3 as opposed to the 3-4 that they've run since 2009 when Capers got here?
Yeah, so they play so much nickel that I'm not sure if it matters all that much. But it would be interesting to see them transition to 4-3, because even then, if you're a 4-3 team and you're still playing nickel, like basically every team in the league is doing for base right now, or at least, the majority of their plays, if not base, you have to have a couple interesting ways that you can take a turn. So basically, I think if you transition to a 3-4, the person that would help the most, Mike Daniels. I think getting him in a pure penetration role where you're just telling him, beat that guy one-on-one, beat that guard one-on-one, beat that guard one-on-one every single play. He will make more penetration plays than he's ever made in his career. That's one thing that's kind of been odd in the Caper system. This is so penetration-based, but Daniels being a defensive end who's basically, a three tech, he's been kind of hurt in that role in terms of like how talented he is versus what his production actually is on a game-to-game basis. So I think that would help him a bit. Kenny Clark can dial. Those guys will probably still play, nose tackle. Dean Lowry will probably play left end, the big end position. But then you get to that weird spot at right end where you're like, okay, do I want Nick Perry being – so you could do it a couple ways. So you could either have Clay Matthews being the right end and Nick Perry being the left end, being the big end, right? And then that pushes Dean Lowry off, and you're kind of small at that Clay Matthews spot on the right side. Or you could have Nick Perry starting and then have Dean Lowry as the big end on the left side and transition Clay Matthews to, off the ball linebacker, where, he excelled there a couple of years ago. So I wonder if transitioning to, a 4-2 nickel instead of a 2-4 nickel not only puts Mike Daniels in a great spot, but also puts Clay Matthews in a great spot. And I think – getting those three defensive linemen, I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like getting the defensive linemen of Dean Lowry, Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, and then, you know, our current outside linebackers in Clay Matthews and Nick Perry on the field at the same time. Those guys are five of the 11 best, you know, defensive players on this team. So I think transitioning to a role where you can keep all of those guys on the field in nickel situations, I think that could help Green Bay down the line.
Okay, so in sticking along with that team, and I agree with you, Justice, in keeping those guys on the field. And Mike Daniels used to get pulled off on third down, and it was always frustrating because I understand you want to go faster and quicker, and you're in nickel, and, you know, Daniels is not necessarily fast, but he does have a quickness and he's got an ability. So at least to be a disruptor, I think you have a point there. So we don't know who the defensive coordinator is going to be, but out of all of the options out there, who do you think would be best suited to come in and do whatever it is that they're going to do with the Packers? It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who's going to stick with the 3-4. I know Vic Fangio is kind of a popular name that gets thrown out there, and I wouldn't mind that. But who do you think, given who they have right now, we don't know who they're going to add in the draft, would be a best option? Is there any names that maybe we haven't heard or that are kind of under the radar?
Yeah, so I think Vic Fangio would be an interesting situation because that's a guy – who I think it would benefit Lowry, Kenny Clark as, like, you know, bigger type of defensive lineman. It would still, you know, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, for as much as people like to complain about them, on a personnel basis, they're doing fine. The problem is that there's really no outside linebacker depth behind those two because Ahmad Brooks and Tyler Fackel were playing instead of Reggie Gilbert and Vince Beagle for most of the season. So those two guys should be fine. I worry a little bit about Mike Daniels' role. Because right now what Vic Fangio is doing in Chicago and what he did in San Francisco, those are more true 3-4 defensive ends that they're using. So lining up, you know, Daniels on a guard and telling him, go through a guard, you know, extend your arms and then peek on a side, you know, play both sides of him, play the run the entire time. It's kind of the opposite of what his strength is. He's kind of, you know, halfway 3-4, halfway 4-3 in Dom Capers' role right now. But I would like to see him in a more penetration-based role than Vic Fangio has. I would say if we're talking about other defensive coordinator candidates, James Betcher from the Arizona Cardinals is an interesting one. Basically, he's really, really young. Ever since he spent 1 year with the Colts, I think, and then since then he's been with the Cardinals. He has basically had massive success on that defense the entire time. He was the guy under Todd Bowles, and then he took over for Todd Bowles when Todd Bowles went to the New York Jets. And they really haven't missed a step in Arizona. For as much as people talk about Bruce Arians as, you know, the quarterback whisperer and stuff like that, the issue in Arizona, you know, basically the entire time Arians has been there, hasn't been defense. It's always been the offensive side of the ball. So Betcher is kind of an interesting guy because he's really only been there like 6 years or something like that. So he's really young. I think – if he took over and the way that Green Bay hires guys, I mean, in my entire lifetime, Green Bay hasn't really hired an outsider at either general manager or head coach. So one would assume that, you know, Mike McCarthy's successor is probably going to come from his coaching staff. James Betcher is, you know, one of those young guys who I think could make that head coaching jump in a few years. If Arizona hadn't had so many injuries on the offensive side of the ball over the last 2 years, he might have been, you know, might be in that conversation right now.
Interesting. Let's just get one thing out of the way real quick. This isn't a long-winded question, but you and I are in the same boat on this, and I know that. But Clay Matthews needs to be on this team next year, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. He's had his best year in, like, 3 years or something. It doesn't make any sense. If you look at stuff, we're going to have something on settingedge.com, I think, at the end of this week. But it's basically it measures tackles for loss and sacks relative to your snap count. And Clay Matthews is, like, a top 20 edge defender there. Which isn't, you know, he's not Von Miller, but I don't think anyone expected him to be Von Miller right now.
No. And, you know, I've said for the last, especially this year, is that Clay Matthews has been fine. Kind of like what you said earlier. Nick Perry was even fine for the most part. The problem is the guys behind them were, in Beagle's case, hurt and his growth stunted that way or just kind of bad. So they have to play more snaps than they're used to. If you can get Matthews in kind of the role that I envision as Chris Long with the Philadelphia Eagles, not quite the same thing, obviously, it'd be a different scheme, but if you get him in that role where he's not playing every single down and he's just coming in and it's basically go get him, I think that he would have a lot of a lot more support than he has right now. I don't understand. It seems like it's been a thing since, he signed that extension in 2012. So since like 2014, the thing has been to get rid of Clay Matthews. So I'm not sure I understand that, but that's neither here nor there.
One of the guys that I would point to would be Elvis Dumervil when he started to age. I think like 2013, 2014, like Elvis Dumervil basically was a non-starter and he was still putting up double-digit sack seasons. I think Elvis Dumervil was he might have led the league that last year. I think he had like 17 sacks as a non-starter. So there's definitely that role has been proven for aging, you know, superstar pass rushers before.
Yeah, it's absolutely perfect. Last thing, Justice, we'll have you on obviously again before once the draft everything takes shape and focus. But and I'm definitely putting you on the spot, I know, because it's January 7th. But they hired Justice Mosqueda today, and he runs the draft. Run the first round pick in 280 characters or less.
Everyone gets mad at me because I take a quarterback, either Baker Mayfield or Lamar Jackson, maybe Josh Rosen if he's still there, and my house gets burned down. Yeah, I know. It's going to infuriate people all the time, but, I mean, Aaron Rodgers is a, 35-year-old? He's about to be 35, I think. 35-year-old quarterback.
Next December.
Yeah, man. Like, I understand the emotional attachment to him and the fact that, you know, people want to make one last push with this staff, but, I mean, in terms of the coaches, it's like they've cleaned house already. And I don't know, at some point you have to think about the future because we already saw what McCarthy looks like without Aaron Rodgers.
Fair enough. So Baker Mayfield is obviously, or Lamar Jackson or Josh Rosen, you said, if he was still there.
Yep.
Okay. So let's just say craziness ensues, and I actually think this is a possibility. You know, there's a run on quarterbacks, obviously, because that happens all the time. Let's just say none of the quarterbacks are on the board, and you can't trade back. So I guess I'm kind of asking, who's your favorite cornerback or edge defender?
Oh, okay. Man, I feel like I'm going to talk myself into that Mata'afa guy, even though I'm not sure if he's actually going to get drafted in the first round because the NFL gets scared of those light pass rushers for some reason, even though guys like Vic Beasley and, you know, Melvin Ingram, Clay Matthews, those guys end up hitting just as much as anyone else. I would probably say Bradley Chubb, the pass rusher from North Carolina State, just because he's just done it forever. Harold Landry, the kid from Boston College, is another guy. The issue I would say with Harold Landry is basically he's been battling an ankle issue, and he looked very different when he was hurt than when he was healthy, and I don't know if he's healthy because he ended the year hurt. So I guess that'll be something that I'll be able to catch up at the Senior Bowl. I'll be able to talk to him about that and see it, you know, firsthand. But I'd probably say Bradley Chubb at the end of the day, the kid from North Carolina State, unless for some reason, you know, they're done with Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and we need a safety, then I'd get Minkah Fitzpatrick. But if not, Bradley Chubb is probably the pick.
So there you have it. January 7th, from your mouth to God's ears. Here's hoping, at least. Justice, thank you for coming on. Obviously, when we hit the, you know, past the Senior Bowl and stuff like that, we'd obviously love to have you back. But check him out. Setting Edge is his podcast. I listen. So it is definitely worth your time. And then he mentioned earlier places you can catch his work and you could follow him. It's at JUMOSQ. Follow him for quarterback of the future tweets and obviously the pass rushers and Senior Bowl updates, and he does a little bit of everything. Justice, thank you again, and I look forward to finding out for your sake where Baker Mayfield lands.
Anytime, guys, whenever you want me.
Thanks, Justice.
Thanks, guys.
And we are overloaded with guests this evening. The next guest, you've also heard her voice before, is Michelle Bruton. And the first thing I want to know, first of all, let me finish the introduction. Michelle Bruton from Cheesehead TV, and she has been here with us before. The first thing I want to know, Michelle, last night you said the Rams were your pick to represent the NFC. I can give you a mulligan because I'm the host of this show. So if I give you a mulligan, just please tell me it's not going to be the Vikings.
I don't think I can promise that.
Oh, they're okay. All right, we're off to a great start here. So, anyways,
I mean, listen, the Saints look pretty good. So I don't know, but I agree that, and even putting aside whether Packers, no Packers, I think we can all agree, except for Vikings fans, that a team hosting its own Super Bowl is repugnant. So for all our sakes.
Absolutely agree. Okay, so now that we got that out of the way, welcome back. I think I'm trying to remember the last time we had you. I don't remember what we talked about. It's been so long, so that's not good. I'm sure you heard the Packers have a new general manager. Let's start. The first question I have is, how surprised were you when news broke that Ted Thompson was transitioning into a new role?
I was shocked. I know that we've heard comments from Mark Murphy the last couple of years that would suggest that Thompson was, not going to be around forever. But I think we were all sort of expecting the Dom Capers news to break, which it did. But then, 30 minutes later, I found out about Thompson, and it was sort of like, wait, what? It was just like a classic misdirection almost, like a news dump, trying to sneak it in under the wire. And I think that once I learned that he was just being reassigned within the organization, it made a lot more sense to me. But obviously the implications of just learning he's out, that could mean McCarthy's gone, that could mean the whole staff turns over. So I think I was momentarily shocked. And then when we learned that, he'd be still kind of on board, just in a different title, it was a little bit less shocking. But yeah, I mean, maybe some people can honestly say they were expecting that, but I don't think I was.
Hey, Michelle, it's Jason. It's good to have you back. And I actually can say, I think the last time Michelle joined us, the problem, Jacob, is that we didn't move swiftly enough and grab Michelle to do one of our other podcasts. She went over to Cheesehead Radio, and they were smart enough to draft her and snag that best voice heard around the world for their show, and that's why we haven't had her on in a while, because we're teammates on the same squad at Cheesehead TV. But I remember last time, I think it was all the way back two off seasons ago, we were making jokes about Matt Forte and his Forte puns. So that's what I remember. Been a minute, but so, Michelle, I've heard you on Cheesehead Radio, and there's been a lot of stuff that's happened today. And so Brian Gutekunst is the general manager. So I don't know if the best thing to ask is if you were surprised that it was him over anybody else, but there's a lot of speculation that went on over the past 3 or 4 days with regards to who the Packers were going to bring in. And there were reports from Bob McGinn that there was going to be some waves made around the team and the organization if Russ Ball was hired. So what was your take on all of that? And do you think that there's a possibility that the Packers might have switched directions here to try to appease everybody? And by everybody, I mean maybe the head coach and the quarterback, if in fact they did have any sort of issues. I wrote about at Cheesehead TV about how much say does Aaron Rodgers have. And then surely, shortly after that, sure enough, it's reported that maybe he did have an opinion. So what was your take on that? Just kind of trying to read through everything that happened over the last 3 or 4 days.
Yeah. It's been crazy. And I think all along, I truly believe that it would either be Brian Gutekunst or Elliot Wolf. I honestly didn't believe that they would bring an outside person in. I know they were using Korn Ferry, the search organization, to headhunt for them and look at some external candidates. And I know obviously that there were a lot of reports coming out that Russ Ball was very, very high up on the list, which I, to be quite honest, and I'm not doubting the veracity of those reports at that time, and you're right, something maybe could have changed internally to make them shift. But I think it always looked like it was either Wolf or Gutekunst's job to get. It's hard for me to imagine that they could go from Ted Thompson in the GM seat to someone with no scouting background whatsoever. And I think sort of the telling part about it is that Gutekunst and Wolf have been, moderately highly sought after by other teams the last few years. The 49ers interviewed Wolf the Packers denied the Lions the opportunity to interview Wolf, which I think both the Lions and Wolf were a little bit upset about. So you could sort of see how valued they were around the league, whereas Russ Ball, listen, he very well may be the most valuable person in that front office when it comes down to what he's able to do with those contracts, the magic he's able to work, the fact that the Packers are able to pay receivers like Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams what they're paying them, plus, you know, probably in all likelihood make Aaron Rodgers the first $200 million player in football, which I'm sure they will. But that is a very esoteric skill set. It's not – and there are, you know, you can have different forms of general managers. Some general managers draft unilaterally. Some of them, you know, work more behind the scenes, work on books. But I don't think that the rest of the league views Ball as someone who can be the whole package. And I think that's ultimately sort of what the Packers front office decided on as well. So I think Gutekunst is a great hire. Wolf is still extremely young. They're probably going to lose him, but I think that they made the right choice. And I think now what it comes down to is, can they keep Ball happy enough? Can they give him some sort of promotion, a pay bump, whatever, to keep him around? Because he works magic with those numbers, and it would be a little bit scary if they had to kind of start from scratch there.
So going back through the process of them hiring Brian Gutekunst, one of the reports that surfaced that Jason referenced was, well, there were two separate ones, when it was reported that Russ Ball was the leader in the clubhouse or something of that sort. And that was reported by Bob McGinn, Pete Doherty, Tom Silverstein. Like, almost every writer expected of the internal candidates, if an internal candidate was going to get the job, it was going to be Russ Ball. So the thought was, or the report was that came out after that, was that Mike McCarthy not only would not be happy with the hire, but he might quit and leave. That was reported by Bob McGinn. And then Jason Wilde reports that Aaron Rodgers would not be thrilled about the prospect of Russ Ball being the next general manager either. Do you think that that played into this decision-making at all?
I think unless every writer has the same source and that one source was mistaken, I think there was definitely a time where Ball was really heavily favored by the front office, just from the reports that we know about. So logic, you know, it stands to reason that there had to be some sort of internal shift, and whether that came from pushback from McCarthy or pushback from Rodgers. I know that there was some reluctance in the front office to the idea that Ball just wouldn't be that different than Ted Thompson, which obviously is kind of what the team is going for. If it wants to capitalize on Aaron Rodgers' kind of limited window, you know, they're going to need to get a little bit more aggressive in free agency. And I think Ball is very much a sort of He's of a like mind with Ted Thompson. He probably wouldn't take them in the more aggressive direction they wanted to go in. I also think that Ball was very heavily involved in letting Micah Hyde go, which obviously, in my opinion, was probably the Packers' biggest mistake of the last year. They really whiffed on that one. He was incredible this year. And so, you know, I'm sure that didn't sit very well with people like McCarthy as well, because he took away one of his best players. And, you know, that decision, I think, had a lot of impact on Dom Capers losing his job as well. So I totally think that there was probably two camps within the organization, and the camp that was reluctant eventually, you know, won out.
Yeah, Michelle, I agree with you. And I looked at that today, and I saw the Rob Domofsky report about Russ Ball maybe jumping in and taking over on the decision, not only on just Micah Hyde, but also on Julius Peppers. And maybe Peppers wanted to go back to Carolina anyway, and there wasn't going to be an opportunity for him to play this year. But both Micah Hyde and Julius Peppers were playing today in playoff games, and the Packers were home. Now, to be fair, obviously no Aaron Rodgers, a lot of other factors. It wasn't because of those two guys. But there's a lot of – there's been no shortage of frustration from fans about the team letting some of those guys go and then not adequately replacing them, although you could argue that if Kevin King stays healthy all season and maybe if he develops a little bit more, maybe he mitigates more of Micah Hyde, even though they played a different role. Julius Peppers is tough to argue, still double-digit sacks, and that would have been really handy for the Packers. In fact, he makes a huge play at the end of the game today that could have possibly turned things around if Carolina had come back. But I agree with you. I think it's time to get a little bit more aggressive in terms of free agency and maybe even the draft and moving around and who they bring in and how they attack this whole thing. And I don't think Russ Ball might have done that. So I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. And let's just talk free agency without necessarily getting into specific players, because obviously, you know, I don't know how up to speed we are on all of who is out there. What is the – give me one or two positions where you think the Packers need to go free agent versus just strictly drafting this offseason. I've said I think they need 2 to 3 impact starter free agents that have some veteran experience. So where are those areas that you think they should attack it that way versus just trying to bring in somebody, even though they're picking higher in the round to get an impact player, where they need to get it right and they need to get somebody who's got some years of experience in the NFL?
Yeah, I think a big thing is you have to look at the positions that are sort of lacking in leadership right now. And so, you know, I think on the secondary, Clinton Dix doesn't seem to have stepped up into that leader role that we all would have sort of liked to see him take. And then the corners are also young as well. So I think it'd be really, really great to get, whether it's a corner, you know, corner is obviously a bigger need than safety, but if they could bring in a free agent veteran defensive back who could kind of lead that really young group, I think that would, even if it's not necessarily a shutdown corner, like one of the best players in the league, I think just bringing in some veteran leadership the way that you have now, you know, Clay Matthews and Blake Martinez in the linebackers group, or the way you have Mike Daniels for the linemen, I think that kind of shores up that area of the defense. You know, the one that's really tricky for me is tight end, because I would have said last year that, oh, my God, if the Packers can just bring in an impact tight end, they'll make it to the Super Bowl. And then we all saw what happened with Martellus Bennett. So that didn't quite work. And, you know, there actually are a lot of really talented tight ends in this year's draft class. And I think pretty much every Packers fan would love to see them take Troy Fumagalli in the second or third round and get some more Badgers on that offense. And then I guess what other positions, you know, running backs, I've seen some mocks having them go running back, which sort of just makes me laugh, because I feel like that position suddenly, it was funny when Lacy left, no one knew what they would do. And now it's probably the most, you know, solid position group they have. And, you know, I really like what we're seeing from Kenny Clark. I feel like the defensive line is pretty much set as well. And, we've been wringing our hands about inside linebacker 2 or 3 years ago, and they're kind of set there too. So I think really the two really big positions of need are the secondary and tight end. And then, you know, it never hurts to have some young receivers in there as well. But I know, so just thinking of specific players, I'm trying to remember if A.J. Bouye is going to be available. I guess Jacksonville just signed him. But, yeah, I think corner would really be the way to get the most bang for your buck in free agency.
Yeah, the best available corner was kind of mentioned last offseason was Tremaine Johnson of the Rams.
Yeah.
And he's slated to be free this year. And then Malcolm Butler's the other one from the New England Patriots. But you mentioned receiver. And you mentioned that, you know, the spike in pay for Devontae Adams. You mentioned the salary of Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb. The Packers obviously have the cap space to keep all three on the roster. However, paying Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb upwards of $24 million when you're paying Devontae Adams $14 million by himself, $38 million total for three receivers, yay, I can do basic addition. It doesn't seem wise. And the Packers clearly for the last, well, I don't know, since 2014 when Jordy Nelson was doing deep balls all over the place, have needed an injection of speed at wide receiver. So that's led some to believe that the Packers could either extend Nelson and or Cobb to try and lower their cap hits, ask them to take straight pay cuts, or pick one or the other, cut the other one, and kind of not really start over, I guess isn't the right word, but move forward with Adams and one of Nelson and or Cobb. What's your take on the receiver position? Would you pick one or the other? Would you try and keep them both around and then add some speed in the draft or in free agency. There's some guys available. You're Brian Gutekunst. What's your first decision here as far as Nelson and Cobb?
Yeah, you know, it's hard because Cobb is obviously younger and he's more of a utility piece on the offense. He can do a lot of different things. He can help bail a quarterback out. You know, Jordy can do that too. I mean, we've seen Jordy run out of the slot. We've seen him do different things, but also, you know, what he really does best with Aaron is that back shoulder sideline throw. I think for me, the thing I keep coming back to is the idea that when you've got Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams in the backfield, there's really not much room for Ty Montgomery back there anymore. And so if for a second we can put Randall Cobb in the slot receiver box, which obviously he's not, you know, truly one, but let's just say he is for a moment. Well, if you lose him, I think that Ty Montgomery slots in there really nicely. And so to me, that's a pretty obvious shuffle they can make without really losing a major position or a lot of talent. And then with Jordy Nelson, you still have a deep threat, which obviously, you know, granted Aaron Rodgers was out and Brett Hundley was not moving the ball downfield whatsoever this season. But, you know, you don't want to lose your explosive play potential. And Nelson just offers that on virtually every time he's on the field. And so even though he's a little bit older, and, you know, he's kind of coming to the end of, I think, his time in Green Bay. I think it would be a real mistake to lose that element of the offense that he brings.
So just because here's my thought on that real quick is whichever one you keep as far as Nelson or Cobb, I think either one of them is your slot receiver going forward. Based on what you just said, however, you think Nelson can still play on the boundary?
I do. I think there's two things. I think, one, he's still coming off a major injury. And two, he's playing with a quarterback who can't move the ball downfield. And so I don't think it's necessarily fair to kind of consider this season the true representation of where he's at with his career. I know a lot of people think that he's kind of lost it, or he's, you know, past the point of being able to, like, gain separation and outrun the young, fast defensive backs that we're seeing in this league. But I don't know. I think that, I guess, time will tell in terms of when they start reporting for training camp and what we can see that he can do with Aaron Rodgers. But I still think it's a little premature to assume that his whole game has changed just from what we saw this year, which was such a bizarre year to kind of make any judgment about the Packers as a team, you know?
Okay, so speaking about Aaron Rodgers, and we kind of talked a little bit about this with Justice, and I tweeted about this a couple weeks ago, just kind of brainstorming and thinking about, you know, I kind of started looking at, okay, where was Brett Favre at this point in his career when he was Aaron Rodgers' age? And he was just, you know, Favre was just coming off of 04, and Aaron Rodgers was about to be drafted, which was obviously before Favre was ready to be done, and obviously the Packers had to make a decision there. They haven't drafted this high since 2009, and obviously Aaron Rodgers was well into his prime, maybe just before his prime at that point. But we're picking 14th now, and Aaron Rodgers turns 35 this upcoming December. So if
I think I see
the
where
situation
this is going.
Right, yeah. If the situation presents itself, and, you know, Jacob talked about it with Justice, sometimes there's a run on certain positions, there's a run on quarterbacks. For whatever reason, there's a guy that somebody within the Packers scouting organization or even Brian Gutekunst is enamored with, is available, and we know that there's probably still a good 3 to 5 years left of good Aaron Rodgers football in Green Bay. Do the Packers do what they did before? Does history repeat itself? And is it inappropriate? I'm not saying do they definitely pick a quarterback in the first round. I don't think that's their target right now. But is it outlandish? Is it too soon if the opportunity presents itself and they're kind of in the same situation that they were several years ago when Rodgers was on the board?
I think yes, and it's hard to say that because it feels a little bit intellectually dishonest, just in the sense of obviously Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest things that's ever happened to the Packers as an organization, and you're totally right. These are the same circumstances in which he came into the fold, so how can we turn around and say, that was incredible, that was one of the best things this team has ever done, but don't do it again. But I think at the same time, listen, we're looking at a playoffs right now where we've got one team led by a 40-year-old quarterback and one team led by a 38-year-old quarterback. So I don't think it's unrealistic to assume that Aaron Rodgers could have another 6-7 years in the NFL. It's maybe a little bit of a stretch just because we have had a couple major injuries, but, you know, it's certainly, let's say the conservative side is 5. He'd be 39, which is pretty normal at this point with strength and conditioning. So I think the problem is that if you're going to take someone in the first round, that is someone that you think is going to be playing for your organization at some point. That's not someone you're trying to just get, develop a little, and then trade for a higher draft pick because you've already used a first on him. So what could you possibly get back? So I think it is too soon. I think it is somewhat of a shame to have one of the highest draft picks in recent history. And, you know, obviously that's the biggest bang for your buck, the quarterback position. But at the same time, they could use that pick to get, you know, I think the Packers right now are 2 or 3 impact players away from the Super Bowl. And if that pick in the first round, number 14 overall, can get you one of those players, be it a cornerback, a tight end, whatever, you've got to do it. Because before you get ahead of yourself and start planning for your next quarterback, you've got to give the current one everything he needs to bring you another Super Bowl. And this, I think, is the best opportunity they've had since Aaron Rodgers was drafted to do that for him. They're finally going to be a little bit aggressive. They finally have a high draft pick. And so I think if I'm Aaron Rodgers and I see them take a quarterback, I mean, I know Brett Favre was angry, but, oh, if I were Aaron Rodgers, I would be incensed. All I can say is if they were going to do that, they had better make sure that they've got him locked into his next contract before they do it. Because I think that would be kind of slap in the face to him.
Here's the difference real quick on that between Rodgers and Favre is when the Packers drafted Rodgers, Favre was kind of starting the will he, won't he drama nonsense.
Right.
And Rodgers has
right.
consistently talked about wanting to play for a long time. I don't want to say I'm opposed to quarterbacks because obviously it's the most important position in football. I've lived my entire life only watching Hall of Famers play quarterback for the Packers. So I would like that trend to continue, even if that is unlikely. The thing is, you mentioned it. If Aaron Rodgers plays 5 more seasons, then the first-round pick goes through his 4-year deal and the 5th-year option. So he's
right.
never going to play for your organization. It's a wasted pick. You make that pick if, like, the Packers picked Aaron Rodgers thinking that Favre may only play 1 or 2 more seasons. He ended up playing 3
right.
more years. So that's kind of my thought on the quarterback spot that you guys were kind of talking about there. So that's going to be interesting. Michelle, I did the same thing to Justice, and I apologize. I know it's January 7th, so you may
Uh-oh.
Not know. You may not know, and that's okay. But you're in Brian Gutekunst's seat, and the Packers are on the clock at number 14. Do you have a name of somebody that you really like at this point?
Because we don't even necessarily know all the people who are going to be kind of available at that position. I'm trying to think. It's funny because, like, we could see some of these really great, you know, Darnold, Mayfield quarterbacks available, but we've already decided we're not really going for quarterback. I'm trying to think of who. I mean, I think – I'm trying to think of the other, but like Saquon Barkley is incredible, but they're pretty set at running back right now. Maybe I think probably the best name that comes to mind for me right now is Joshua Jackson, who's the cornerback from Iowa. Because I'm sort of, and it's infuriating because how many defensive backs have they taken in the first or second round the last few years, but we still find ourselves in a position where it's a real weakness for them, and certainly depth is an issue too. So probably that's the name that comes to mind for me right now. I think I'd like to also maybe see a tight end, although I don't know that there are any that are rated. That's almost kind of the problem with picking 14th is you kind of got to go from one of those traditional defensive line, defensive back, offensive line type positions that tend to have the most value there. You're not really looking for a tight end that early. So, yeah, I think probably at this point in time, I'd say Joshua Jackson.
And I, as I mentioned earlier in the show, I love Josh Jackson. So if they pick him 14th overall, I don't care that they pick Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins and Kevin King in each of three of the last four drafts. Don't care at all. But, Michelle, I want to thank you for coming. As always, you provided great insight to us, and you're welcome back. And we didn't even get a bad pun out of this show, so it's been
– I know.
It's been a really good one. So
well, I think it's because we're growing up and we've grown up and we've matured.
Well, you could speak for yourself on that one, Jason. I can promise you I will never grow up as much as I probably should. But Michelle, before we let you go real quick, tell us, obviously I told them we can find you at Cheesehead TV, but tell us where we can find the rest of your stuff, your books, and you do all kinds of stuff outside of football too.
I do, yeah. So I do write for Cheesehead TV, and I podcast for Cheesehead Radio. I currently write for Bleacher Report, and I work as an editor at a sports book publisher called Triumph Books. But actually, I'm going to have sort of a really big, crazy work-related announcement coming up maybe in the next week or so. So if you follow me at Michelle_NFL on Twitter, you will find out where I will be hanging my hat next. So, yeah, stay tuned.
If that were a tweet, I would quote it and put the eyeball emoji. So, everybody,
yeah, not to
keep your...
super cryptic, but, yeah.
Okay, well, everybody keep your eyes peeled. We'll have Michelle, president of Sports Illustrated or something, the next time that she's here. So.
Yeah, right. I get stock
there
options and everything.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate your time, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Michelle.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, Jason, we have a lot to unpack. No pun intended. There you go. There's your terrible pun. The first thing that I want to get to is, Jason, we didn't really talk about it. You know, I said if I was in Mark Murphy's seat, I would hire Elliot Wolf based on – what I know about him and all that stuff. However, this is no disrespect to Russ Ball, and I'm not stupid enough to think that him not being a personnel guy is disqualifying him from being a good general manager. However, the hire was almost a sigh of relief because, I mean, simply put, the Packers have had somebody with scouting acumen in the general manager's chair for the last, 27 years, almost 30 years worth, if you go back to Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf, Mike Sherman, Ted Thompson. I said it last week, I see no reason to try and reinvent the wheel here. I personally have had an interaction with Brian Gutekunst. He will never remember me, and that's okay, I understand. But I got to interview him after the Packers selected Arizona State alumni Carl Bradford. So while that didn't go so well, he was very engaging. He's very bright. He really explained stuff in detail, which I appreciated. He knows his stuff. And as far as his personality, I will say he appears to be the opposite of Ted Thompson. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to talk to the media more. Some of you guys care about that way more than I ever will. Personally, I have no interest in listening to a GM give coach speak when a bunch of players are injured or whatever it is you want answers, whatever you people want answers from Ted Thompson for. So that's my experience with Brian Gutekunst. I am happy with the hire. I think that having the personnel guy around and then having Russ Ball stick around with a raise and a promotion, it probably means they lose Elliot Wolf. But the reality as soon as they entered this situation was, if they had picked Elliot Wolf, they would have lost Brian Gutekunst. If they had picked Russ Ball, they might have lost both of them. So I'm not going to wring my hands too much over losing Elliott Wolff, and that's no disrespect to Elliott Wolff, because as I mentioned, he would have been my pick for general manager. I am not in charge. So Mark Murphy picked Brian Gutekunst. Wolff will potentially stick around in Green Bay. It's possible that he doesn't. And if he doesn't, then that's just kind of part of this business at this point. So that's my feeling on Gutekunst. Jason, what's your feeling at this point about the new general manager?
Well, there's been some tweets that have come out just since we started the show, and some reaction from Elliott Wolff's father, Ron Wolff, on his son getting interviewed and not being chosen for the job. And he basically just said, well, I'm glad he got a chance to interview. And obviously if they thought highly enough of him up there, then they would have given him the job. End of discussion. And that's a direct quote from Ron Wolff. I mean, you're talking about somebody's son there. Obviously you want your kids to succeed, and he wanted Elliott to get the job. And I think a lot of us a month ago, if you would have told us that Ted Thompson was going to step down this soon, because none of us were expecting it, we would have all immediately started with Elliott Wolff, because that's where everybody's mind has been. That's been the kind of the popular name that's been thrown out there as the successor to Ted Thompson, and everybody's wanted that because of Wolf's youth and also his ties to his dad. Jacob, you mentioned the scouting backgrounds for almost 30 years. I mean, 1991 is when Ron Wolff came into the fold, and he took over for Tom Bratz, who, you know, this was all before you were even born. And Tom Bratz was a business guy. And so, yes, the Packers have gone the route of the scout over the last three decades, and it seems to have worked out well. So with that in mind, that was one of the things that I started souring on Russ Ball about, was the fact that I didn't think he had a good enough background in terms of player acquisition and personnel, even though he does the contracts. He's involved with more than we realize. He understands more about football than we know. I didn't realize up until this past week that he'd been a strength and conditioning coach and had any kind of a coaching background with regards to football. So, and if I'm being totally honest, once it was obvious that they were looking at other options besides Ball, even though it had been announced that Russ Ball was likely to be the GM from some of the reputable sources like the beat writers, I would not have said Brian Gutekunst is the clear favorite. I would have said, you got to do what you got to do and go try to get John Schneider. Now, not to the detriment of the team and giving up a bounty of draft picks and players and things that are going to set the franchise back to where he has to come in and fill a huge hole just because of what the Packers gave up for him to get there. Seems a little counterintuitive. But when it was announced on Sunday earlier today, when we're recording this, obviously Sunday night, that it was going to be Brian Gutekunst, I was okay with it, because it was kind of – it keeps the continuity. He knows the team. He's sticking around. You've got the Ron Wolff tree still alive. Everybody's, you know, attached to that. I'm attached to that because of the success that they've had. Not that bringing somebody in from outside of that wouldn't have been fresh blood and maybe a good perspective, but I think they did well here with who – they're hiring. They're, like I said, they're keeping the continuity, but it's not Russ Ball. They're keeping everybody happy, whether it was because of the drama or not, or if it was just completely misreported that Russ Ball was going to be the next GM. Regardless, we know who it is now. We know who it's not, and it's time to move forward. But I think we give him a chance, and he's our general manager. Our being Packers fans, we have to want him to succeed. He's in that seat now. So I feel pretty good about it, and I'm encouraged until I'm given a reason not to be. So I'm going to take the angle of I trust him until he gives me a reason not to, versus I don't trust him until he earns it, I guess, if that's one way that I can put it.
I agree. The old saying when the Packers were not signing anybody in the offseason was, you know, in Ted we trust. Well, Ted Thompson had earned that to a point, because he had built a team that had won a Super Bowl and was a perennial contender. Now, Brian Gutekunst certainly inherits a decent situation. As far as in-house free agents, there aren't a lot of consequence. It's possible they want to re-sign Morgan Burnett, but the two big ones were Davante Adams and Corey Linsley. Those two are locked up. And, yeah, I think you're right. You know, I saw the speculation of Russ Ball. I saw the speculation of Elliott Wolff. But I never really saw anybody say, Brian Gutekunst is going to be the general manager. So it was surprising, to say the least, I guess. But, you know, just because it was surprising doesn't mean it was bad either. Gutekunst has been in this office a little bit longer than Elliott Wolff. He's been here for 19 years. Wolff has been here for 14 years. So it's been he has the same acumen, the same qualifications, all that stuff. And I'm not, you know, I mentioned last week, Elliott Wolff doesn't have anything that he has because of his last name. However, I do think there are fans that exist that want Elliott Wolff because of the job Ron Wolff did. And Ron Wolf's a Hall of Famer. So it's interesting, I guess, if nothing else. There's a lot of layers to this to peel back. The first thing that I read from Ryan Wood about Gutekunst, and certainly not a concrete statement because it didn't come from Gutekunst's mouth, but was that he would be surprised. The source, Ryan Wood's source, would be surprised if he was not more aggressive in free agency than Ted Thompson. Now, of course, the way that you can spin that is it's almost impossible. It is impossible to be less aggressive in free agency than Thompson was. However, Jason, that's a hot button issue every single year. And I've kind of mentioned my philosophy personally on free agency, because I think a lot of fans assume it's as simple as Madden. You know, we need a pass rusher. Okay, well, go sign Ziggy Ansah or, you know, whoever it is that's available. I just picked that name because I know he's available. It's not that simple. And I know that. However, you know, my philosophy on it is the offseason Ted Thompson had last year, I think, was a very good one. He signed a big name in Martellus Bennett, a smaller piece in Lance Kendricks, and then you've got guys like Quentin Dial and others. Ahmad Brooks eventually came in. That's a good offseason as far as that goes. Now, do I expect them to participate on day one of free agency now that Ted Thompson's not here? Not often, but I at least think there's a chance of it. And there, it shouldn't be as simple as this guy's available, like A.J. Bouye, for example, last year. Young cornerback in his prime, it shouldn't be a slam dunk that, well, you know, Green Bay is not going to be involved. They need a cornerback. Why the hell shouldn't they be involved? But I don't think we're ever going to spend like, you know, Daniel Snyder does with the Washington Redskins or something like that. But, Jason, are you at least a little excited now going into free agency?
Yeah, I am. And I think the days of the inactivity in free agency and through player acquisition from the outside and the way that Ted Thompson did it are gone. He did it in a unique way. He had his own wants and likes and dislikes, and he had his own style, and that's over with now. And you can't survive in this league, and I don't think that a guy like Brian Gutekunst, unless there's always a possibility that I could be wrong and we could be surprised, is going to come in and he's going to be as active or less active than Ted Thompson was. There's moves to be made. And I think the formula for succeeding in the NFL is clear. You've got to have experience on the field at the most important times, which is at the end of the year. How many times have the Packers had problems advancing into the playoffs or in the playoffs because they lost a key guy at a key position and they have next to nothing behind him? Now, it's frustrating to watch some of these guys go play somewhere else and be successful. You know, even today, when Ladarius Gunter is thrust into action for the Panthers, you know, he makes a couple of plays and defends a couple passes in a playoff game. And I'm sitting here wondering, well, where was that against Atlanta last year? And so, again, that goes back to the whole Packers defense, which is going to get a facelift anyway. But that lesson has been learned. And hopefully one of the reasons why Gutekunst was the choice is he indicated, you know, by all accounts, you know, he did really well in his interview and he, quote unquote, knocked it out of the park, according to some of the beat writers. And hopefully he illustrated that he can use the salary cap space that the Packers have in a creative way to try to bring in some players that can make a dent in getting back to the playoffs and getting back to where they want to be, which is division title, top seed, playoff buys, things that should have happened this year. There's a little bit of luck that goes into that in terms of players got to stay healthy, and you can't always plan for a collarbone injury or things like that that are unexpected and unavoidable in certain situations. But day one of free agency, I'm okay if they don't do that, but I definitely want to see this specific offseason. I definitely want to see, like, first couple of days of free agency, getting in there and getting their hands dirty and getting busy trying to bring in players that can make a big impact, because you've got jobs that are going to be on the, continue to be on the line. Mike McCarthy's job is still theoretically on the line. He's only under contract for two more years. He's got a new boss now. The relationship apparently is good between Gutekunst and McCarthy, but we don't know how that's going to go as they get into the season. You know, Ryan's got a reputation to establish now, and if the Packers come out and start slow and they start out 2-4 or start to struggle, you never know what's going to happen. McCarthy reportedly had a really good relationship with Russ Ball that has apparently dwindled a little bit by some accounts. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it certainly happens. So I think we're in for things going in the right direction. You'll see change in a good way, moving in the right direction in terms of activity and player acquisition.
Agreed. And it appears that your Russ Ball comments, at least to some degree, are true, because it's said that, you know, Russ Ball was locked up with Ted Thompson on ways to build the team, and Mike McCarthy very clearly wants veteran help. He mentioned player acquisition and are we doing everything that we need to do from the football operations standpoint to put a championship team on the field. It was clear to me that McCarthy wanted somebody that, I mean, there are times where you saw it this year. You saw it where you've seen it in past years where McCarthy has to answer for the way Ted Thompson built the team, and he's playing guys, with all due respect to these players, because they're NFL players, I understand that. But, you know, for the example I used earlier today was, you know, obviously this is bad timing because of the way he played yesterday. But, you know, the Chiefs need a cornerback, and they went out and signed Darrell Revis. The last 2 years when the Packers have needed a cornerback, they've relied on LaDarius Gunter and Donatello Brown and, you know, Lindsey Pipkins, who, to his credit, Pipkins played well. I'm not saying he didn't. However, McCarthy is clearly frustrated by having to do those things. Now, McCarthy has done and said all the right things during the season. He very much at least puts out the front that he believes in his guys. But I think it's clear that he wants veteran help. He wants veteran depth. And I think that is one of the reasons that Gutekunst is here, is to give him those things. Now, there's a lot of layers to how the Packers can have veteran depth and all that sort of stuff, and we will get to those things as the offseason progresses. But this is the first domino to fall. The general manager is the first domino. They still need a defensive coordinator, and Vic Fangio becomes a free agent, if you will, on Tuesday. So it's possible that the Packers, according to Bob McGinn, and Bob McGinn had a loaded story, and most of it actually turned out to not come to fruition, but Bob McGinn said that the Packers' preferred choice for a defensive coordinator is Vic Fangio. So we will see if that's the case. Supposedly, the leader among the internal candidates is Darren Perry. Count me among those that thinks that's a meh kind of hire, but I'm not going to speculate on who that's going to be. But what we do know is the Packers have a new offensive coordinator, and it's an old offensive coordinator. Joe Philbin is back. Jason, here's my thing when it comes to the offense. I see a lot of people that are, like, pissed off about it. And, well, they're just bringing back the old guard and blah, blah, blah. You know, my thing is this. They could have brought in the next hot shot play caller, whoever you know. They could have brought in the next Sean McVay to be their offensive coordinator. But it's still Mike McCarthy's offense, and Mike McCarthy is still the one calling the plays. And when Mike McCarthy's not calling the plays, Aaron Rodgers, who's played in the same offense for years, is the one adjusting the plays on the field. So not much, if anything, was really going to change a whole lot. Now, the offense that the Packers had was much more diversified when Joe Philbin was around, and they finished in the top, I think it was the top five every year, but like one when Philbin was here. So that's something to be encouraged about a little bit. How much that had to do with playing with James Jones and Jordy Nelson and Greg Jennings and Donald Driver and Jermichael Finley and a healthy Randall Cobb. Well, obviously that has something to do with it. Joe Philbin, when he was here, he's a good coach by many accounts. He's a really good man. And the players clearly cared about him. He's gotten the endorsement of several players, former players, and it appears that the Packers are happy to have him back in Green Bay. Jason, my question is, are you?
Yeah, I'm good with it. I'm good with it because this is not your average, ordinary offensive coordinator position. You know, Ben McAdoo said he wouldn't come back to Green Bay when he was asked, or if he did, or you know, however it came out that he said he's looking for a situation where he can call the plays. Well, Mike McCarthy calls the offense, and this isn't going to turn back into the 2011 Green Bay Packers by any stretch. It's not the same personnel when Philbin was here last time, but I think what he does is he's another voice in the ear of Mike McCarthy when McCarthy might tend to get a little stubborn or tunnel vision when he's calling his plays. We've seen him do some baffling things at times in games where he's trying to throw when he should be running the ball or vice versa, or there's opportunities to be had, but he prefers to try to attack it a different way. And you've also got the Aaron Rodgers factor. Rodgers calls a lot of the offense at the line and checks into other things. And so does Philbin help that? Does he help that situation? You know, you've got a changing of the guard at wide receiver. Jordy Nelson isn't what he used to be. We talked about that a little bit with Michelle. So I think having a familiar face, but an experienced face back in Green Bay is going to be a huge help. Now, one thing I want to say, and I haven't even tweeted about this, and it's interesting, is that when Philbin left, he left on the heels of the tragic loss of his son. And there was a lot of talk about how he would probably never return to Green Bay, and there was a lot of fans and a lot of people who were very upset for him. Of course, obviously, it's a very tragic thing to go through, and you never want anybody to experience that. But from a football standpoint, they were also missing Philbin because of what he did for the offense. So that he is coming back to Green Bay with that memory and that having loomed over there is very interesting to me. And as somebody who lost their dad not too long ago, a couple of years ago, I have a different and fresh perspective on that. And I think that it says a lot about what Joe Philbin feels about Green Bay, the community, and how well he feels like he's going to be welcomed and taken care of by the community, by the organization, and by the Packers. So it's all good things for me. I welcome him back with open arms.
I do as well. Can't complain. And even if I do, it won't matter anyways because he's already back. So there's a lot of news still to be had, and we will have all of that. But the big one today, as we mentioned, Brian Gutekunst, not Russ Ball, not Elliot Wolf, not John Schneider, none of those things. None of those men will be the general manager at Green Bay because it's Brian Gutekunst's show, and I've said that as much as I can to try and get pronouncing his name down as much as I possibly can. So that's the big news of the day, and that will be the end of our show today. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. I want to thank Justice Mosqueda and Michelle Bruton for coming on the show tonight, giving us some perspective on the Packers' needs, who they believe Brian Gutekunst is, what that'll mean in the future. Brian Gutekunst will be introduced tomorrow on Monday. I don't know if a time has been set or not yet, but he will be introduced to the media as the next general manager of the Packers. So everybody, get ready, get excited. You meet your new GM tomorrow. Thank you guys for listening in. You can follow me personally on Twitter. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. We will be back, hopefully, with defensive coordinator news or various other types of news. But thank you this week for listening into Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.